D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation remains one of the most controversial movies of all time, almost 90 years after its release. Considered the first epic in American film history, its complex storylines elevated the cinema experience from the simple to the extravagant. But the story's enthusiasm for the rise of the Ku Klux Klan during the Reconstruction prompted some cities to ban the film. Riots started in movie theaters when it was shown in Boston. DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid, has decided to take on Birth of a Nation as the subject of a new multimedia experience. DJ Spooky is one of the most sought-after club DJs in the country. On any given night, he takes dozens of records and blends them together in one seamless groove. With his new exhibition, Rebirth of a Nation, DJ Spooky does the same thing with celluloid, cutting, pasting, and weaving sequences from the original film and transforming them into a wholly different experience. Tonight, DJ Spooky, also known as Paul D. Miller, performs the show in Providence, Rhode Island. Last June, we accompanied DJ Spooky to the debut of Rebirth of a Nation at the Spoleto Festival in Charleston, South Carolina. He explained how he came up with the idea of breaking down a film and sampling images rather than songs.
I had been noodling around with some historical films, stuff like Maya Deren's experimental dance pieces from Divine Horseman or Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will. Mainly as issues of thinking, like, how does an artist deal with visual sampling? And I'm really intrigued with it. So I'd be at a club or something, and I want to see how the audience would react. Because usually when you're at a club, they're playing, like, cheesy video, like a spaceship flying around or, like, you know, somebody breakdancing or something. So I was DJing one or two nights, and I was like, yeah, I want to see how they respond. If all of a sudden they just saw all these Ku Klux Klan guys on the screen. And the audience just stopped dancing for a while. I was just, like, staring at the screen. And I was like, okay, I think I got something here.
It's a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
So you are selective then in the footage. How did that process develop? Which footage you decided to use in your mix?
I focused on stuff that I felt was kind of the central turning points in the film. So it's like when you're DJing, you sample the hook. You know, you take the main riff. So it goes from 3 hours to 1 hour.
Hmm.
And, you know, it was a lot of editing.
Recurring images that we see, central points, as you say, in the film. The Southern family watching, you know, the happy darkies dancing occurs quite a few times. Do you use some visuals almost as music? Is it almost like a hook or chorus or that one would go back to in a song to reinforce?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole thing around what I'm doing with the film is kind of going through a kind of a repetition, and I consider it like almost like, how should I put it, like a digital exorcism, you know, just getting rid of various issues. But the funny part is repetition somehow works with the music, and it works with the way I've edited the film down, so I go for motif. You know, like when Coppola has these helicopters in Apocalypse Now playing the Wagner.
Ride of the Valkyries.
Ride of the Valkyries. That's an image. That's a motif. It's a motif from a different even, you know, music tradition, but it works. It's over Vietnam. It's like the wrong soundtrack, wrong music, wrong everything, but it works. For me, with my film, I'm doing a similar pun around taking different music, because I'm mainly working with electronic and ambient material based on blues riffs. But it's not obvious, so repetition helps hold it together.
As DJ Spooky performs Rebirth of a Nation in front of a packed Satilli Theater in Charleston, relentless rhythms bleed from his laptop computer. Cascades of Griffith's stereotypical images cross three screens. Black men committing treacherous crimes, white women in peril, Klansmen riding to the rescue. Most of those images are digitally enhanced with overlaid images of schematic designs or circuitry. Boxes surround some characters, and circles envelop others.
I'm really fascinated with this idea of social circuitry, what, like, holds people, groups of people together. Like, me and you are sitting here, there's a line. In my film, there would be a line connecting you, and you'd be a circle, and I'd be a triangle. And then everybody else in the room, we'd have a little line connecting, and and every time we move or say a different word, the pattern between us would be changing or something, you know. And you can see these kind of patterns and structures amongst people. And with DJing, you gotta remember, I'm standing there for hours watching a crowd of like 1,000 people dance. I can usually tell, all right, this couple's mad at one another. The boyfriend actually likes this other girl. They're having an argument. He's going to go home with this girl, or she's going to go home with the other somebody. You know, you're standing there watching people for hours. And after a couple of years, you can actually read the crowd, you know, just kind of just see what people are doing. I apply that same sense of watching body language to the film. So every time a character moves, their schematic changes, and their relation to the people around them. You can see these lines connecting them and stuff.
You know? Yeah. You would also direct our focus. I mean, if say, Lily and Gish came on the scene, would be a triangle, and our mm-hmm. attention would immediately go to her, and we'd think, okay, what does he want us to do? And so you're sort of manipulating our focus as well.
Hey, yeah. I'm kind of focusing people's attention on the body language, power dynamics in the scene. You also have to remember, much of the characters who are quote-unquote black who are doing the bad things are actually whites in blackface. So I highlight some of that. And then there's issues around how the class structure was based. So all of it is just trying to get people to think outside the box, so all puns intended here.
It's interesting when you sort of reverse the polarity or the negativity of the film. The negative becomes the positive becomes the negative, particularly when the Southern family is in the cotton field, and all of a sudden they go from white to black because you've been, you know, obviously making a statement there.
Sure, but the fun part about art film is anything goes. I mean, I don't know if you remember when George Lucas released Star Wars and they had Jar Jar Binks, who's obviously a quote-unquote black character playing a servant kind of weird role. A lot of hacker kids didn't like it, and so they did what they call the Phantom Edit. These kids edited the film, and they edited Jar Jar Binks out. And they found George Lucas's personal email box, and they sent him an email compressed version of the film. People love this stuff right now.
So what you're doing in, you know, big performance at the Spoleto Festival is something that's already in the underground going on in the internet. People remaking culture.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it democratizes things because it's like, you know, hey, you know what? You have one version, there's the official version, this is my version. And I think that's a healthy way of getting people into technology, getting them to check out the software and understand how culture is moving on the internet era. And also just to get people to have more fun instead of being just like, I'm going to stare at the screen. In fact, you want to interact with the screen. You're like, no, I didn't like that scene. Let's get rid of it. You're the director.
As Rebirth of a Nation's debut ended and the audience left the theater, we asked a few people to share their thoughts about the film they had just seen.
I know it's, you know, a non-traditional narrative, the way he's repurposed these clips from Griffith's movie, but I think thematically it's very rich, and it had a narrative structure of sort of loss, betrayal, revenge, hatred, and it had, I think, the emotional content that he wanted it to have.
It's a little bit like a Philip Glass piece, where you walk out, you think you've heard a lot of repetition, and suddenly in a week it reassembles itself in your head and starts to play again. And I think this will do the same thing for me.
Would have been happy with more of an edge on it, even. A commentary would have been nice. I mean, there were a million comments that came to mind as I was watching it that I would have loved laced in it subliminally as well.
I think it could have stayed more close to the storyline, made it easier to follow. When you take away from that, I think you confuse the issues. A lot of the young folks that he's trying to reach have never seen it. I heard one young man, probably 10, 11 years old, said he was totally confused. And my statement to him was, see the movie and you'll understand it.
I was amazed at the ability for some to stomach it all and to be able to sit there. I saw a few people leave out, which I thought was interesting. I think this is the most that I've kind of taken in a while.
What do you hope people take away from it?
I really hope people walk away from the film, one, feeling like, you know, this is just not stuff I believe in. Two, I hope that they feel like there can be many versions of every story told under the sun, you know, to get people thinking of the idea of uncertainty around what they see and hear in everyday reality. Here we have the most televised war in human history, for example, and nobody knows what's going on, you know. I think I just want people to be more uncertain about the entire media environment around them.
Paul D. Miller is DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid. His new multimedia project is called Rebirth of a Nation. For more, you can go to our website, npr.org. Paul, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.